PFT Media.
All episodes of The Experience with Chris Fio were recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic.
This is The Experience with Chris Fio. In each episode, Fio brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
In this episode of The Experience, Chris speaks with Robert Hill about life on the road, being handpicked by Mikhail Baryshnikov, and what he's going to bring to the Orlando Ballet.
Gun in a holster, that vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting, cause the transcontinental flow got me transient.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Today I have with me the artistic director for the Orlando Ballet, Mr. Robert Hill. How are you doing?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful today. I woke up very excited and anticipating this interview.
Excellent. Yeah.
So how is your day going so far?
So far, very good. I was doing a little bit of research about the ballet, The Sleeping Beauty, which is going to be something that we're going to be presenting in the next couple of years, actually.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So. You want to go in more detail about that one?
Sure. It's one of Tchaikovsky's, the three most famous Tchaikovsky ballets are Nutcracker, Swan Lake, and Sleeping Beauty. And it's a beautiful, beautiful score. It's also a ballet in what would be considered four acts, a prologue and then three acts. So in today's world, people don't do three intermissions. So part of my duty is going to be to put it into a two-act version, which does exist in other places. I know American Ballet Theatre has converted it into a two-act. It fits in today's world better that way. So, wow. It's kind of what I did with the Swan Lake.
Yeah?
Yeah. Swan Lake was also originally in four acts, and we do it here in Orlando. The version that I've done is in two acts. So.
Oh, wow. And why two acts instead of one full through act?
I think because for people to sit in the theater for 2 hours and a bit without a bathroom break or some kind of a break, I think that's just been sort of theater tradition, actually. So here's what I did with Swan Lake in particular. I took, you're telling a story, right? So I took the first act of Swan Lake and I thought, okay, what actual information is being delivered here? And found out that you learn that the prince is having a birthday. The queen mother gives him a crossbow for his birthday, and she says, now don't forget, now you have to pick a wife. And that's it. So during the overture, I have the queen and the prince come out with a special from above, and they stand there, and she gives him the crossbow, and he thanks her, and she touches her head, and she says, don't forget, you have to get married now. And then they go right into act two. So I got rid of the whole first act.
Wow, a very abridged version.
Yeah, but you know, the actual, you know, the dancing that is associated when you think of Swan Lake starts in the second act, essentially. And so people really find that this version of Swan Lake is quite successful.
It's very engaging and very, you know, it's not overwhelming. As you would say.
No, it's not overwhelming, and it's all, I think the word ponderous can be used for some of these older ballets. You know, they were done in a time when we didn't have TV. This was what they did for the entire, you know, they had meals at the intermissions and things like, you know, things like that. So it's a very different world, and there's a lot about these ballets that are worth preserving, and there's a lot that that can be chopped away. As far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah, and what are some of the things you are trying to preserve with ballet?
Preserve. Yeah, that's a good question. The art form. You know, it has become much like skating and gymnastics and those kinds of things. You know, the athleticism of ballet has become very, very, very prominent, which I love. I absolutely love it, and I think in some of the new contemporary choreographies, that works really, really well. There's a certain amount of the Swan Lakes and the Giselles and the Nutcrackers that is art, just pure art, and there's the physicality that produces that quality of art. And I think that that's part of what I'm trying to preserve, along with keeping it vibrant and relevant in today's world.
Right. And it's very athletic, as we've once said. Like, you once mentioned that football players and basketball players have to do ballet sometimes. And would you like to go into more detail about how is ballet an athletic thing?
Well, if you look at, I mean, it's absolute just pure physicality, you know? I mean, it's nothing but physicality. So, and the jumping and the turning, and then with the partnering, and, you know, male-female partnering, male-male partnering, female-female partnering, lifting and supporting each other, and it's become more and more and more athletic as a lot of people really try to outdo themselves, you know, in terms of some of the physical tricks that can be done, you know. So I think it's obviously a different kind of physicality. You know, the art of it is to not show the effort. Whereas in some of the sports, you know, showing the effort is kind of part of the fun, and you can get away with that because it's not part of what it is that you're doing, you know. Whereas with ballet and you know, unless it's choreographed in a contemporary way, the art of it is to show that it is effortless, and of course it is not.
Yes, it clearly is an effort, and it starts from a young age. You're doing the summer intensive, am I right? Would you like to go more into that?
Sure. At Orlando Ballet, we do and most places that are professional schools have a what they call a summer intensive, and this year we're doing a six-week course chopped into 2 3-week sessions. Probably next year we'll go back to a 5-week course, but they come in, and you know, we have they range from youngsters 8, 9 up until, you know, early 20s, and they do an intense day from 10 to 5, you know, several classes and contemporary classes and musical theater classes, but they get 2 ballet technique classes in each day. So by the end of the summer course there, they have usually improved tremendously, and are also pretty exhausted.
I bet so.
You know, you were talking about the effort part of it and the athleticism. I've had many people come in to watch a rehearsal for the first time. You know, people who don't really know what ballet is. And of course, there's a preconceived idea of what most people who don't know what ballet is, but they think they know what it is. And I remember how many times people were sitting next to me in front of the room and watching the dancers rehearse, and one person leaned over to me and says, "My God, they sweat." Yes, they do. They seriously sweat, you know.
Wow, that's a very interesting question to ask somebody.
Well, you know, I enjoy watching it because you can see them seeing it for what it really is, almost for the first time, that it's not just this airy-fairy stuff, you know. It's really hard.
I know. There's the whole misconception behind it, even when I was young, was a long-running thing that's just, like you said, the airy-fairy stuff.
Exactly.
You know, and what you're trying to do now is bring more awareness to people such as myself, you know, middle-aged young men who have no conception of that. And how would you plan on doing that?
You know what it is? It's just, we got to get them in the door. I'll tell you what, I had an experience not that long ago. I was at Publix shopping, and I saw this woman who was obviously waiting for me to check out, and I could walk through the door, and she stopped me and said, Mr. Hill, I just love the work you're doing at the Orlando Ballet, but I want you to know that we went to Giselle. Now, Giselle is one of the real old-fashioned, in the white tutus, and that people could easily consider one of the old-fashioned, boring ballets and everything. But again, when it's done really well, it can be quite effective. And she said, but I wanted you to know that I'm really proud that my husband loved it. And I thought, wow, mission accomplished, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it
That's
was great.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
Is it usually hard to get people to fill in the seats at the theater?
Actually, in the past two seasons, we have increased our ticket sales by 40%.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we basically sold out our Nutcracker run last year. Yeah, and this is a 2,400 seat house at the Dr. Phillips Center.
Wow, so, 2,400.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, and it's very exciting to have a full house. The dancers on the stage love it. The audience, who doesn't like to be in an audience that's packed, you know? And so it's quite thrilling. This is a really amazing, amazing time for Orlando Ballet in every way. We have a brand new building coming. We were talking about it last time I saw you on Lake Formosa. Well, what happened was we were in a building over on Lake Ivanhoe, and we had to be removed basically overnight because of mold. So the entire organization was kind of homeless for the longest time.
Wow.
Yeah. We ended up on the basketball courts at ESPN Wide World of Sports because Disney gave us some space out there. So I was choreographing and teaching on a basketball court for several weeks. And then we ended up at the Church Street Exchange for a while. And then the mayor and the city commissioners gave us a building on Lake Formosa. It's the old Lock Haven Neighborhood Center. And it's a wonderful, wonderful gift. They gave it to us, the building and the property, for a 99-year lease, $1 a year. That's our lease.
That is beautiful.
It's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing gift. So then our biggest benefactor, Harriet Lake, gave us a huge chunk of money. And then we got a big chunk of money from the county and a couple of other sources, and we raised the $14 million that we needed, and we are building a brand new building on Lake Formosa as we sit here talking right now.
That is a beautiful thing going on.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Then
it's wonderful.
Can you tell me the layout of the building, how it's going to be?
Yes. It's going to be, because right now we're in three different locations. Our administrative staff is over on McGuire, and our school is on Princeton, and the company is over on South Street. So this is going to be a way of consolidating everyone back into one building, which is great because the school students love to watch the company dancers rehearse, the professional dancers. You know, it's really exciting, and it's a big part of the reason why kids want to come to our school. So it's going to be enough studios to run our school. We're going to have a huge, huge, huge studio that can be a rental space, and it's going to be big enough to hold. And this was one of Harriet's conditions. You could have a 450 people seated dinner in this event. So it's a beautiful space with a lake view, and then the space can also be a performing space that will seat up to 400 people, and the stage space will be as big as the Disney Theater stage. So it's amazing. And then that studio can be a wall, can come down in the middle, and it could be two separate working studios for when we're just going to be doing rehearsals. So it's a multi-use space with the most beautiful view of the lake, and all the studios in the school side are going to have views of the lake. It's really, really beautiful.
That is amazing.
Yeah, very exciting.
I'm very excited for you, and I would love to visit this place.
Of course. That's going to be everybody. We want everybody to come and visit us.
I will try to bring as much people as I know.
Well, we'll also bring, some new edgy choreographies. We can, you know, experiment and do things like that. Our school shows are going to be in the space, and it's going to be really, really exciting time.
Edgy choreo—that's an interesting phrase you just said. Edgy choreographies. What makes an edgy choreography?
Edgy choreography. That's interesting. I guess it means different things to different people. Certainly, I think it's taking the traditional classical vocabulary and kind of stretching it and pushing it over the edge, making it a little bit off balance, going a little bit beyond, bigger, bolder. I think there's a lot of different ways that you could make it edgy, but to really just take what would be the sort of pure essence of the vocabulary and just making it bolder.
Okay, I like that. That's really freaking cool.
Yeah, good.
And are you going to be doing any performances yourself at the new center when it opens?
No, not there. I will be going back on stage next year four short minutes. That's a beautiful solo that was created by choreographer Jessica Lang. And she originally created it on her husband, but it's gender neutral, so it has been performed. It's a solo, and it has been performed by males and by females. And it's basically the kind of thing where there's not a whole lot of use of the legs. It's this big, long, white dress that covers the entire stage. And it's an upper body expression kind of solo. And it's very poignant, and it's very beautiful, and it really brings down the house. It's a chance for somebody with artistic ability to move the torso and make these shapes and these reactions to music. So I was convinced to go back on stage and do this once. So
that's amazing. How long have you been off stage for?
17 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And why those long hiatus?
Because I retired, you know, I was 41, it's just like athletes, you know, there comes a day when, you know, I was lucky to dance that long, actually. But what happens is, and what happened with me was, I could still do it, and I was happy with what I was still putting on the stage at that time, but the recovery time to be able to go back on again, was getting longer and longer and longer to be able to actually do this, you know. So I had a great career. I mean, I danced all over the world in great opera houses, great companies, great choreographers, greatest ballerinas. And I started choreographing and directing, and, you know, it was time. So you know, it's not like I'm getting back into ballet shape to do this solo. It's not that at all. But It's an artistic expression, is what it is. It's a 4-minute solo, so it's
gonna be beautiful.
It is beautiful. I've seen it, and it's lovely. It's people love it, and it's touching, and it's poignant, and I said yes, I would do it.
I'm glad that you're doing it.
Thanks,
Mr. Robert Hill, doing this. What is it called again? I'm so sorry.
It's called The Calling.
The Calling.
Yeah. And the story about it was, she was a student at the Juilliard, and her mentor, who was the director of the Juilliard at the time, passed away. And then sometime after he passed away, they found this handwritten note that was addressed to Jessica. And after reading the note, she felt so completely compelled to get in the studio to create this thing called The Calling. And that is kind of how it happened for her. So it's full of meaning for her. And if you know that, looking at it, it gives you a very different perspective of what you're looking at, you know?
That's amazing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was about to ask, would you say that most of the ballet art is based in tragedy, or is it the opposite?
Oh, no, I think if it was all based in tragedy, it would be depressing.
Okay, good.
I think tragedy makes great theater in general, you know, obviously. Look at Shakespeare, you know. You know, Swan Lake, they end up united by their love, so it's sort of a happy ending, even though they die.
Oh, gosh.
But they're united by their love, you know. And then at the end of Giselle, she saves his life, even though he broke her heart. And so she saves his life. So it's kind of heartwarming a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Certainly tragedy is very theatrical, and it does serve ballet, certainly, but I don't think that's all it's about. It's definitely not. I think there's a lot of positivity in it, and we like to have a healthy balance.
Yeah.
Some of our family shows are very sort of high-spirited and, you know, upbeat, and,
yeah,
you know, the Nutcracker, of course, is very...
So you mentioned the Nutcracker as one of your family shows. What other family shows do you have?
We just finished doing Peter and the Wolf. Yes, and it was really exciting because we had the Florida Symphony Youth Orchestras playing the music live. So we had these young kids so talented, so amazing, that were in the pit just, and I introduced several of them on the stage prior to it so they could introduce who they were and what instrument they played. And I think the kids in the audience just were so enthralled with it. And it's a great, great story. Peter and the Wolf is a great, great story. Even though the wolf eats the duck, it's all right. It's all right, you know.
Just a slight bit of, you know, turbulence.
So we kind of take some of our, you know, for example, we're doing Cinderella this coming season. And it's a full evening, two-act, two-hour show, which is too long for some of the young kids. So we do try to get an hour or less version, which is what we've got with the Nutcracker. We've got a family-friendly version of the Nutcracker. We will do an hour version of the Cinderella story. And any of the other ballets that we present that lend themselves to being kid-friendly, we are going to be doing these short one-hour versions, and we're also going to be narrating them. Even though the idea of ballet telling a story without words, I think that for some of these young children, it proves very successful. They understand it better when they're looking at it. So we're going to be narrating some of these short shows as well. So
that's going to be really interesting. That is, I like the idea that you have with the whole program. What other types of genres would you try to hit? You're trying to do the family friendly, the edgy, and the regular. Is there any expansion on that?
I would like to continue to do all the varieties that we can come up with, so that we can make every kind of person in the public like it. And now, not everyone's going to like Swan Lake. And however, there are people out there who are the purists that only want Swan Lake and only want Giselle. So, you know, we're never going to make everybody happy, but we do try to do enough variety in our programming so that we can reach guys like you.
Yeah.
You know, this woman that I met in Publix, the purist, my dear friend Lizette Valerino. And of course, you know, a lot of our new audience is coming because of our contemporary, edgy, new choreographies.
More extreme varieties.
Yeah, you know, not tutus, definitely not, you know, and more sort of, you know, kind of sexy looking, a lot of sort of, you know, show their beautiful bodies and they just kind of get out there and boogie and show that they can hip hop and they can do all this other kind of stuff. And yes, they're ballet dancers, you know, kind of thing. So a lot of our newer, younger audience members are really, really interested in the contemporary stuff. So,
yeah.
So
that's what I've been noticing, because one of my friends, Kyla, she's a contemporary dancer and she also teaches a little bit and fits point shoes. You know, she knows you. You know, you're a really big person in the ballet community.
Yeah.
You know, and you've been a part of some big names in your life. Would you like to go over some of those big names?
Yeah. When I was asked to join American Ballet Theatre because I auditioned for the artistic director was Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Really, I looked up some of his work. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's still quite vibrant. And
how did that come about?
I was working with a company in Atlantic City, New Jersey, with Phyllis Papa, who used to dance with ABT, and it was time for me to move on, and so she called and got me a private audition. Not private, I was asked to go to the Metropolitan Opera House at Lincoln Center to take company class, and Misha was there, and he was the artistic director, but he's also still dancing in his prime. So that was how I got my opportunity, and he offered me a contract, and so.
That is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, so.
How long were you working under him for?
I started with ABT in 1982, and then in 1988, I took a five-year break, and I went and danced with the Royal Ballet, with the New York City Ballet. I did a lot of guesting around the world, Italy and Japan and Scotland and a lot of places. And
was there anyone in particular that stuck out in your mind?
Anyone what?
Anyone, venue or place or act that sticks out in your mind?
You know, a lot of those great theaters. It was kind of awe-inspiring to dance at La Scala in Milan. Yeah, that amazing theater. The Royal Opera House is stunning. But I truly, truly, truly loved dancing at the Metropolitan Opera House. It just, I danced there for so many years, and I was back a couple of weeks ago to see a performance, and I went backstage and I thought, wow, this feels like my old home, you know?
Like walking in old shoes.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Is there any performances that you've done that that have touched you, like, you know, that have really gripped you?
A lot. I was very fortunate. I had great opportunities, you know, to dance at the Met, to do Romeo and Juliet at the Met, have a standing ovation at the Met. You know, I mean, it's to have those kinds of memories and those kinds of experiences, and to do it with Julie Kent or Susan Jaffe or, you know, some of the ballerinas I've danced with. Phenomenal experiences. So I was very, very fortunate, and I will always have a great deal of gratitude for having been able to do that, you know?
And I'm very all inspired just to hear all this myself.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And, you know, one thing I'm trying to do, we have the same goals, is to, you know, kind of get our voices out to my generation, because my generation has no clue or, you know, has a stigma about ballet. They think it's all airy and fairy, as you once said.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And how would... And like you said, you want to bring people into the doors to show that it's not all airy-fairy.
Okay, so for example, we do something called Uncorked at the Abbey.
Yeah.
I know that that changes people's minds. Some people refer to it as the gateway drug for the ballet.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'll tell you why. It's very stripped down. The dancers are in rehearsal clothes. I select music that they don't know, and then we start choreographing. They have no idea what I'm going to ask them to do, and they have to respond in the moment. So we show how we work in the studio, and then the audience gets to see how that works, and it blows people away. It absolutely blows people away. And then at the end, we do a Q&A. We call it Uncorked because you get there and you get to have a drink with your ticket. So you're sitting in the Abbey, and, you know, it's a very sort of casual setting, sitting at tables, and we're up on the stage, and we do this choreography session, and then we do a Q&A with the dancers, and the people love interacting with the dancers. So this has been something that has been very, very successful to get people who have had a preconceived idea about what they think airy-fairy ballet. those places do exist. I'm not going to say that they don't. However, in the real high-level professional, the American Ballet Theaters of the world, the now Orlando Ballet, growing and growing and growing and growing, are showing what it really, really can be. And that's the ballet that I want people who already have a preconceived notion to just be open-minded once. So if you can convince some of your friends, come to an Uncorked at the Abbey this coming season.
And when is this coming season? What's the date? Because I will bring my friends.
I don't have the dates. Our website, orlandoballet.org, has all of that information on there. I think we have 3 or 4 Uncorks program. Probably the first one will be in September. And anyway, it's on our website. And that's for a first-time experience, for that would be the way to get somebody hooked.
Awesome. All right, we're at the last three minute mark. Is there anything else did you want to promote? You want to tell me and my generation? Do you anything else?
Come see us. Be open-minded. Come and see us. It's a wonderful thing, you know, to have kids training in our school when there's so many other less positive things that kids can get into these days, you know, that they're learning how to dance, they're learning how to stand up, they're learning how to behave, they're learning how to be disciplined. And you know, they always say that even if you don't end up becoming a professional dancer, that discipline and that dedication and that commitment informs anything else that they do as they grow into their lives and everything. And it's, they always say, if you want something done really well, hire a dancer.
that's a beautiful statement. You know,
yeah,
I didn't know it's a lifestyle thing too.
Well, you know, when you think about it, I mean it's like any of these athletes, these really, really high level athletes, they are disciplined because you have to. How else do you produce on that level? you know? So then you take that discipline and you transfer it to something else that you're passionate about, no matter what it is. And you've got that skill, that ability to commit, that ability to be positive, you know, and believe, you know? And
that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know who else we're going to reach through this, but I hope that we do.
Oh, you'll reach a lot more people than you think. A lot of people have approached me and are paying attention actively.
Good.
You know, I walk down the streets and people say, how's the podcast going? How's this going?
This
it's
is
like,
great.
Check out the page.
This is great. I think that ultimately I just want the message to be, because I celebrated my 10th anniversary this past season.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm, you know, I've had to survive a lot of challenges, including being thrown out of the building. But we're opening a brand new building, and it's like a new day at the Orlando Ballet. And it just feels like it's a really, really great, great, great time. And I think I just want the message to be, come join us. We are going on a really amazing journey. And we're going to be, you know, taking the company up to New York eventually. And I just want us to really, really be all of that. And I want the community to be proud of what they have here, and to feel a certain pride that we have this cultural gem in this beautiful city. You know, that
I agree.
That our community is, you know, embracing more and more and more and more. So just come and have a good time with us.
And we will do, and we'll definitely get the word spread through the experience with Chris Fio. And on that note, this has been another episode of the Experience with Chris Fio. Thank you, and have a wonderful night. Robert, thank you.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
By then, who know where I go? But right now I know there's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me.
The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garvey and Kai Legal. It is a joint production of Forma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by NMR Superstar. No place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. A PFT Media production.